1944 from the University of Dayton. He had a very long military career, serving in Germany during the First Gulf War, and he left active duty in 1993 and served two more years in the reserves in the 2000s. He has also worked as a maintenance manager, as an executive recruiter, and Mr. Andrew Lee earned his certification in history at UW-Parkside in 2010. He currently teaches high school at Case High School in Racine. Lieutenant Colonel Randolph Moffitt is currently a senior military instructor at the Kenosha Military Academy. Colonel Moffitt received his commission as an officer in 1978 and served for almost 30 years in the active U.S. Army and Army Reserves, including periods like Operation Desert Shield and Desert Storm, as well as deployments to Kosovo, Operation Noble Eagle, and later Operation Iraqi Freedom. He retired in 2008, worked as a contractor, and redonned his uniform later for the position at Kenosha Military Academy. He's also a published author of a series of novels. Theodore Weaver retired from the Army Reserve as a lieutenant colonel in 2013 with 31 years of continuous service. In 2007, he was mobilized for 6 years in support of the wars in both Iraq and Afghanistan. He taught chemistry at Park High School and currently teaches at Walden III Middle and High Schools in Racine. Scott Flood served in the Army from 2004 to 2012 and spent two deployments over 27 months in Iraq. He worked as a medic trauma specialist with the infantry, where he was also a machine gunner and worked with MPs. Mr. Flood is currently serving as an 8th grade history teacher at Boleyn Middle School and coaching football at Tremper High School. These four gentlemen are very busy, so this interview is conducted in two parts. Mr. Weaver and Mr. Flood are in the first half, and Mr. Andrew Lee and Colonel Moffitt are in the second half. So I just wanted to ask both of you, maybe you could tell us a little bit about your path into teaching. Did you always intend to be teachers, or were you, did this something come up in your service that made you want to be a teacher?
Sure.
You want to start?
Realized as I was going through and finishing up school with everything, or starting school back up after deployments, that I've always been a teacher. Just never realized it, realized that everything I was doing was teaching. Mm-hmm. So therefore, it just led me down that path of, hey, this isn't really a job to me. Mm-hmm. It's dealing with people, which I love to do anyway. Mm-hmm. And I was teaching medical skills to other soldiers in the first place. Mm-hmm. So it led me down that path. Plus, I love the sport of football. So being a football coach, I started doing that 2007 up at Bradley Tech up in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. And then from that, I got deployed and came back. And when I came back, I was like, I want to do that again, where I got an interview over at Carthage College and got hired on, mm-hmm. hence led to me, finishing up school at Carthage College.
So where did you start your college career?
Ooh.
And was it before you were in the military?
Yeah, I started, after high school. I graduated in 2000. Started my education college-wise at MATC up in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. And then in 2004 decided, after Iraq war started up in 2003, decided to join January 2004. So then I joined, and then led to me being gone and getting deployed right away in mm-hmm. 2005, 2006.
So you ended up coming to Carthage partly because you were going to be a football coach and you could do your degree?
Correct. Uh-huh.
Were you able to use the GI Bill at all for
yes.
that?
Yes. Okay, yeah.
That's great. Ted Weaver, how did you get started in teaching?
Well, I had joined the reserves when I was 17. I was still in high school, and I had wanted to go into ROTC, so I picked UW-Milwaukee for a variety of reasons. And then I was taking a lot of science classes just because I like science classes without any real end game in mind until I'd seen a newspaper article about how there was going to be a demand for science teachers and math teachers. So that kind of, that's how I picked that pathway.
Mm-hmm. There's always a need for science and math teachers.
It actually, at the time, a lot of those baby boomers were teaching, and it wasn't so easy to get a job, a permanent job for a couple of years. And once you did, I think, the careers ebbs and flows with retirement. So, mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I mean, I got lucky based off timing. It was mm-hmm. bad timing for a lot of teachers in 2012. Mm-hmm. Bad timing for, the state of Wisconsin with education. But when I finished in 2013, there was opportunity for me, mm-hmm. which was a bad thing for a lot of teachers that were in the industry for a long time.
Right. So you're here because you are military vets, and the big question I have is how you think that your service affects the way that you teach, or how often does it come up with your students or their parents or sure. your colleagues? Mm-hmm. So I don't know who wants to start, Ted.
The earlier thought that we were talking about, that soldiers and sailors and airmen, their experiences vary so widely.
Mm-hmm.
So for one soldier, it means something maybe completely different, not only to be deployed, but how it affects your life. And some soldiers had very negative experiences, you know, killed and wounded around them, maybe themselves, and post-traumatic stress disorder. Fortunately, I had a lot of stress, but it all was manageable. So you come back to teaching, and I ran into a teacher that I had worked with at Park High School in Racine at a cross-country meet. And we were waiting for the kids to finish the course, and he was lamenting that about being teacher, this is all I'll ever be. You know, I'll never make more money, or I'll never have any fame, or he had mastered his art, I think, and, mm-hmm. and he felt like he was constrained. And I says, you know, with the time I had in the war, I have absolutely no desire to become administrator. I have no desire to... That was kind of like my highest amount of stress mm-hmm. that a person could deal with, and I felt very successful at it. I mean, I could have gotten out after a year, and but I stayed with it because I really enjoyed it. I mean, it was very challenging, and mm-hmm. I felt like I blossomed under that. And if I could, I'd still be doing it right now.
Mm-hmm.
So, in a classroom, how does it affect? I think everybody looks at me in the building as being kind of this veteran, this hardened person, and maybe not the most cheerful person in the world always. But, you know, we have a task to accomplish, and we're not always so concerned of people like us. But I think in the end, ultimately, when they're done, my students are just so glad that they had myself, because they know that I've taken them farther than they would have gone with maybe a teacher sure. who maybe takes an easy pathway sometimes, because I think soldiers – more inclined to maybe try to do the difficult right than maybe the easier way, and maybe stay later, work later. I mean, I work very late, but when you're at war, I was seven months, 24 hours a day, Saturdays, Sundays, holidays, and I mean, I'm sitting at my desk at 10:30 at night on a Sunday, and a phone rings, and it's just
right.
You never know what you're going to get, mm-hmm. but you got to deal with it. And teaching's not like that. You can turn it off and go home if you want.
Yeah, for me, teaching military experience. Playing a role in my teaching, absolutely, 100%. Anybody who comes into my room, anybody who sees my style of teaching that happens, knows the background, and they realize there's a lot of structure in my classroom.
Mm-hmm.
The structure comes from the military mm-hmm. side, where doesn't matter what I was doing with the military side, that discipline, mm-hmm. and then also setting the expectation. That's one thing I guess I really learned with teaching end, where mm-hmm. if I set that expectation, that clear expectation up front for students, they meet it every single time.
Mm-hmm.
So when you take a look at, I don't know, other classrooms or whatever, they're not as structured as mine.
Mm-hmm.
The kids know up front the expectation coming into my room, hence they meet it every mm-hmm. single time. They might not fall in line right away with what's going on in the class. And I guess falling in line probably is the wrong way to describe it.
Right.
But for lack of a better word right now. Right. But, I mean, they know what the expectation is. They know I'm there to help. They know I'm there to help teach them, for in my case now, social studies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what I do. My job is to help students learn, period,
mm-hmm.
And everybody succeed. So
I think we could flip that question around, too, and how does being a teacher help being a soldier? Because I taught for at Park for about 14 years before I was, you know, on active duty and taught besides that. And you know what ACT reaction reviews are, right, Scott?
Yeah,
so, I mean, I would do it with general officers. We had these large training exercises we put together, and I became a project manager. Well, I think teachers, they have to do a lot of planning. We have to do short-term, medium-term, and long-term planning. And we had people in who were doing this training. They weren't good at that because maybe their job, like we had some police officers who were excellent soldiers, but the ones that I personally dealt with, and I won't make it wider than that, sometimes being a project manager has lots of moving pieces with hundreds of people you're dealing with, and they were really good with people skills. They were the best with people skills because police have to diffuse situations.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. As a teacher, I was able to – I was a natural for the project manager role, and there was only a few of us who could do it. And with after-action reviews, they became kind of what we call an Army dog and pony show sometimes because you're trying to make everything look just perfect. And nobody wanted to do those because you're standing up in front and everybody's critiquing it. And after a while, I was the one that was doing them all the time because they're very interactional with the crowd back and forth. It was a big teaching session, what it was. And I think being all the years of being a teacher, people told me that they could see the school teacher when I was up there doing it. You couldn't rehearse that any more than I could rehearse a chemistry lesson. Right. I can't rehearse it because you don't know. It's interactive, and you don't know what the people are going to say, but you pick what this person says, and you're able to take the lessons out of that. And so I would say in many ways being a teacher helped me do what I had to do. And the military is always self-instructional. We're always teaching ourselves and our soldiers how to do things. So I was always able to get at what is it that we really need to know here? What's the lesson? And sometimes other people weren't so good about that. But I think teachers, when you do it for a while, that's you become good at that. And I was able to bring that skill over.
See, and you got that different experience right there with that. And then my end was military and then teaching. And that literally the military side led to organization. Like, for example, while finishing up school at Carthage, the classroom environment can't teach you at college, can't teach you what your running your own classroom management style is going to be. It just can't teach you that. The best way to learn that is being in a classroom and doing it. So therefore, when, you know, having my own where I did get it hired on and then setting that precedent and the expectations right away, knowing the military side really helped make it pretty simple for me. The hardest part is trying to portray everything or setting that expectations clearly for students to understand, which has been very successful with me in my classes.
So you had, as a soldier, been already teaching people and organizing people in many different ways. So this was another way of organizing people and a set of knowledge that you wanted to pass
Absolutely.
On. So I'm curious, were you coming back into the service as a teacher, were there any others in service with you that had been teachers prior to being deployed?
I can't think of any. A lot of police officers, a lot of public employees to one degree or another, because as a teacher, you know, I would do annual training and a lot of summer training over the years, and that kind of fits the teaching career because teachers are kind of looking for something to make a few extra bucks anyway. And police officer, if you're a public worker and you take off for military service, they can easily fill the void where if you work for a small company, we had people who were excellent soldiers that maybe had their own business, but they suffered because when they came on active duty, who was taking care of their accounts? Or if they worked for an employer of a small business, they would do their 1 year, and then they would quite often get out of the reserves because they just couldn't stand another deployment. It would hurt their bottom line. I mean, it hurt their career is what it did. For me, it didn't matter.
So do you know of any of your fellow employees right now that are in the reserves?
I know a couple, or they used to be.
I know of one that used to be in our building. There's only one other person in our building that had military service here.
I had a couple of friends of mine that they came back the same time or a little bit before me, and they would go back in the school to finish up school, and they were going for the same thing, teaching.
Oh, really? And are they teaching now?
No.
Oh, oops.
Yeah. They decided to get out right away.
So how do the students talk with you about your time in the military, or do they? And what kinds of questions do they ask?
Kids would ask a few questions, but it's just like, and you talk about your military service, people get bored with it. They can't relate to it. So I think that's one of the reasons why veterans from the other wars didn't want to talk about it. There might have been some negative experiences, a lot of, death involved or things. That could be one reason. But the other reason is people just can't relate to it. And the kids will ask a few questions, and then they forget about it. You're just a teacher. They don't really care about too much about those things. Every now and then it comes up. But
my experience is usually I get questions right away where it's anything from, what did you do to, what did you see, that type of stuff. The only thing I really don't talk to them about is exactly some of the stuff I did see, because spending 27 months in Iraq with all sorts of different things that were going on, with whether I was with infantry or the military police side, every time I went over, there was somebody who didn't come back with us, whether it was while I was there or right after. So lost brothers, because mm-hmm. of it. So some of that stuff I don't want to trigger back into me, right. especially in the classroom environment.
Right.
So, yeah, there's some questions, like, for example, what exactly did you see, or did you ever see anybody die or anything like that? Questions I don't take. Mm-hmm. And they understand that. Usually I let them know that right away mm-hmm. because that's one of the first questions people ask me, at least students ask. So that's one of them that are kind of the hot button for me that I don't talk about. But everything else, absolutely, I'll discuss.
Mm-hmm. Have any of your students come to ask you about whether they should enlist?
I've had a few dealing with 8th grade students over at Bowen that go on to ITA and the academy mm-hmm. Where they've gone over there and they've asked different questions. I've also dealt with a few that are in the 8th grade and they're thinking about it, or they've done different things with it. Where at the end of the year, we do a drill and ceremony at the end of the year with the students. Usually I'll select two students that walk in, bring the flag, drill and ceremony with it for the year. So,
well, for myself, before the war, I had a number of them that joined the Wisconsin National Guard or the Reserves. And since I've been back, I've only been teaching for about 3 years now, and it's been mostly middle school. So they're a little on the young side for that.
Sure.
So mm-hmm. when I was with the high school kids, they're looking for college money quite often. And they're receptive to discussions with it because the kids I have now are a little on the young side.
The high school students that I work with,
football players,
yeah. Whether it was coaching over at Union Grove, coaching over at Tremper here, mm-hmm. They'll come to me and ask questions or different things, and mm-hmm. I let them know what it's going to be like, give mm-hmm. them a good example. I've also had family members that growing up, that finished high school that we're thinking about going and mm-hmm. sit down and have those conversations. So mm-hmm.
my son is going to turn 16 soon, and he's convinced that he tells me about the pathway he wants to take, and I say, hey, that's exactly what I did, ROTC, mm-hmm. joined the reserves. So he wanted to go to West Point, but I don't know if he's going to jump through those hoops. But
our guest later will be from Kenosha Military Academy. Is there something like that in Racine or not?
Not that I know of.
No, I don't think so either.
I don't think so.
It's fairly, those are somewhat unique. There tend to be more of them in urban areas. I know Chicago has a few, but it's interesting. We'll find out more about that later. So back to the military service, what inspired you to join? And, do you see teaching and military service both as sort of two sides of a coin of service, or are your motivations very different?
Well, I think early on, for one reason or another, as a little kid, I was always a little G.I. Joe, and I just was looking for an excuse to do it. And you're looking for college money and ROTC and reserves. I keep a spreadsheet of my income, and I added it all up, and with my war service, and I've been teaching on and off, You see, first teaching job was in 1990, and when I added all that income up and I added up the money that I made in the reserves, especially with the war, I've made more money in the reserves than I had teaching continuously. So financially, it was a good deal. Now, that's never a reason enough to go into something, of course, but once I was doing it, there just never seemed to be a reason to quit, and I stayed with it. I just always liked military. You get there, and if there's not a good reason to get out, then you kind of stay with it. Because there's a lot mm-hmm. of people. I mean, you meet Scott and I met. We immediately hit it off, and there's right. very few people in the military that you can't sit down with right away and start getting along yeah. with mm-hmm. if you are military. Because you think to one degree or another, you think the same.
Absolutely.
And so you go from one unit to another, and it's like I know what everybody should be doing here and what their role is, because the Army is kind of a cookie cutter sort of deal.
Yeah.
And I was like. Knowing,
I joined really because of the Iraq War. Mm-hmm. I had both my grandparents served Korean. I've had aunts and uncles that have been in, and some are still currently in. Mm-hmm. But my last ones that actually saw combat was my grandparents. So I said, at the time I was 22 years old and going through the college end, and decided, I want something different. Along with that, I was running a business with a buddy of mine. We had a lot of success at 22 mm-hmm. running a business, and decided, I'm just going to drop that. I'm going to go. There's something about, serving, along with a lot of my mentors that I was looking up to at the time. Mm-hmm. For example, Robert Kiyosaki, founder of Rich Dad Poor Dad. I was reading his stuff, and he was talking about his experiences with war. And I just decided, you know what, let's go do it. So I signed up in January 2004. Ever since then, you know, 2004, got back at the end of the year. And then 2005, got deployed right away. And then I was there until 2006.
It's the greatest of adventures. So. It's the greatest of adventures. And I'm like, and I had been in the reserves all those years. And I had been on active duty in the country for a couple of years. And then I said to my wife that, if I do this again, I really need to go overseas. And one of the reasons was, I says, I don't want to, what'd you do in that war, Dad? You were in the Army for 30 years. Well, I never went. You know, I didn't want to have to say that. I really wanted to go over, and I wanted to be part of that. And very glad I did. And it was a hard decision with the family and all.
Absolutely.
But I would have done it, you know, in a heartbeat.
I remember both my parents at the time when I was 22, you know, and joining. They're like, what, you know, are you really going to do this? My dad on the other end was like, if you're saying this is what you got to do, you got to do it. Yeah. So when I did that, I mean, it was, you know.
My mom and my mother-in-law were besides themselves that I would volunteer to go overseas. But I couldn't live with myself if I didn't. Because there were many people that went over, and by this time they had died. And I was willing to face that because I wanted to say that I had done my part.
And, you know, the question you asked earlier about, you know, the military service side, you serving, and then now currently teaching, it's absolutely serving. You're serving the public. You're serving students now. Mm-hmm. I serve them, and my job, my role is to help them, whatever way, with whatever questions. And really, we are the role models for them. Mm-hmm.
As a teacher, you know, I'm within 4 years potentially retiring and toying with taking the earliest one. In the military, I had so much respect. You know, I'd be flying from here to there. People want to give you a seat in first class, and you were always – you'd be out eating someplace, and someone buy lunch for you. It was a wonderful feeling. Now, as a teacher, our society really doesn't look on teachers the same way. Yeah. You know, and there's not a lot of respect. And in the classroom, some there are and some there aren't. And it's unfortunate because – one of the questions that you had on here was, which is harder? And I would say teaching is harder by far. And I'm not just playing that, you know. Now, I said, once again, everybody's military experience is different.
Sure.
And the hours were longer in the military. The stress was very high. But there was also, for me personally, I had an immense amount of satisfaction with what I was doing. Teaching, you get satisfaction. And there are days when you're like, oh, my goodness, why am I doing this? You have those. Sure. I never had those days in the military where I said, why am I doing this? There were days that I didn't like. There were days that were very, very stressful.
A little different here.
Right.
But teaching some days is the greatest thing in the world. And other days, you know, no one would ever give up their seat in first class for me flying as a teacher. Right.
Sure.
You know, and teaching is hard work.
Right.
It is.
Very hard.
I would say along with that, jumping on that, piggybacking, is – I've had hard days in the military. I've had hard days teaching. But those experiences are what make you better. Mm-hmm. And learning that stressful environment
absolutely
making you better as a better person.
That's and I 100% agree. That stress that I went through made me grow. And I often think to myself, what would I be if I hadn't had the military experience, both here, all those years growing and being in the reserves and then being in the war. And you got pride.
Yeah.
And, you know, I got awards. I don't need to tell anybody about my awards, but I know that I was successful. And you can look back at my life. And Ronald Reagan, I remember this quote about people wondering if they ever made a difference in life. Veterans don't have to worry about that question. Mm-hmm. And
teachers probably either.
Well, and you have the kids come back and they become doctors. And I'm a science teacher. I got kids that are microbiologists now that are much more capable with science than I ever have been. And you feel like you had a piece of their helping them along, and that's definitely a good feeling. And you don't see those kids, unfortunately. You know, you only see like 1% or 2%, and you wonder what the rest are doing, knowing that you helped a lot of them is good.
I've had two different sides of the stressful, whether it be physical or the mental. Mm-hmm. With the military, both deployments, both were totally different. Mm-hmm. One with infantry, one with military police. One was, you know, area recon, base security, convoy missions. The other one is detainee ops, where I worked in prison system. So I kind of relate the teaching end to more of the mental side of stress, where it's, you know, not the physical part, not the infantry part, but where it's, you know, you're dealing with other students, you're dealing with people, and then you're trying to relate whatever experiences they have and they're bringing into your classroom and trying to relate that where you can help them. So
Well, I really appreciate both of you being here, Ted Weaver and Scott Flood. And when I come back, I'll have a different crew here to talk. But I really appreciate your sharing your experiences.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
I just want to remind our listeners that you are hearing a panel discussion with local teachers who are also military veterans on Education Matters on WGTD 91.1 FM. I also want to remind you that you can join in discussion about this program at the WGTD Education Matters Facebook page, and you can also listen to this program on our Education Matters archive page on WGTD.org. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert, and I am talking with Greg Anderle, who is currently a Case High School teacher who teaches freshman U.S. history and sophomore world history and has had a long military career as an Army Field Artillery officer. I'm also talking to Colonel Randolph Moffitt, who is currently the senior military instructor at the Kenosha Military Academy, and he served for almost 30 years in the active United States Army and United States Army Reserves. In the first half of our program, we were talking to Ted Weaver, who retired from the Army Reserve as a lieutenant colonel in 2013 with 31 years of continuous service, and he taught chemistry at Park High School and teaches now at Walden 3 Middle and High School in Racine. Scott Flood, who was also in the first half of our program, served in the Army from 2004 to 2012 and spent two deployments over 27 months in Iraq. Mr. Flood is currently serving as an 8th grade history teacher at Bullen Middle School and coaching football at Tremper High School. But now I want to welcome Mr. Anderle and Colonel Moffitt, and I want to ask you the same questions that I started asking them, which is, what was your path into teaching? How did you decide to become a teacher after a long military career, and in your case, another kind of career? Colonel Moffitt?
Shortly after Desert Storm, I was leaving the tour that constituted that period in my life, and I set out with the objective of getting a teaching certificate. Yeah, went to Northeastern University of Illinois to get my teaching certificate at the time, and spent about 2 years acquiring it. So through incredible bad planning, I didn't finish that until January, and interestingly enough, January is a very hard time to get hired as a teacher, so I ended up working in industry instead for a while, but that left me with my degree, intending to use it, but getting fascinated by the work I was doing as well, teaching adults mostly.
Oh, okay. So you were in the military for how many years before you acquired your teaching degree?
I was probably, I think, about 12 to 14 at that point.
Okay. And then you went back into the military for a while?
Well, I was in the, I went into the reserves after that, and then got activated again, and then got activated again. It was a kind of cycle, so.
So what inspired you to do this? You know, not, I'm sure that maybe you do have some friends from your military days who decided to become a teacher, but, you know, what made you want to be a teacher?
Well, I worked with kids a fair amount on the side in various organizations like local church and that sort of thing. So I like kids. I've always worked with them. One of the things I found really useful around getting my degree was it allowed me, I would go to class at night, and then I was able to substitute teach during the day, and that gave me a lot of experience
because it sure did.
Substitute teachers are always in demand.
Right.
And so I was able to go out and test all levels. So I sort of figured out what age range I was okay with. I find I'm not that great with small
really
children. So I sort of settled on 9 through 12 as being my...
Interestingly enough, all of the people on this panel are working with older kids. The youngest are 8th graders, so that's sort of interesting. Greg Anderle, tell us about your path into teaching.
Well, I started in the School of Education back in undergrad work. Graduated in 1984 from the University of Dayton. Got my commission, did my career. When I got to the end after the Gulf War, it was a place where I was either going to go to recruiting command or out to be an OC at observer controller out at the National Training Center. And my wife said, you've had enough time in the desert. So it was time to go ahead and make a change. So we opted to do that. After that, I did some work as an executive recruiter working with manufacturers, and I coached soccer. So coaching kind of drew me back, and it's a calling. So it kind of starts to poke at you, then punch at you, then kick you. And it reached a place where it was like, okay, it's time to go back, get certified, and go teach.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of brought me back in, and then did some time in the middle school. That I found was not exactly my best fit after a couple years there, and then had the opportunity to land at Case High School, where it's awesome. I love being there.
It's a good fit for you.
It is definitely a good
okay.
fit.
So what do you think about your military career has helped you as a teacher? We'll start again with you, Greg, and then we'll go back to Colonel.
Okay. I think there's really a couple areas where mm-hmm. the training that you do in the military really translates to the understanding by design that mm-hmm. is now there. I mean, it was in the military, it's different terminology, terminal learning objectives and enabling learning objectives. But essentially, that's what you're doing. You're backwards planning. Mm-hmm. So I think that carries directly there. And the other dynamic that I think really applies quite well, it's not what I know as the teacher. It's where are my students or where are my troops when it was time to be in service to make sure that I'm checking in the formative assessments, if you will, to say, okay, this is where you are. Let's maybe re-explain. Let's explore that together and see if we can get a different understanding.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very the similarities outweigh the differences between those two.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Colonel Moffitt?
Well, actually, that's a great analysis. I think any officer in the Army is going to be very familiar with training and teaching and carry those lessons over. I guess I would say, you know, a task, condition, and standard or something the Army is very good at setting, and those translate well into rubrics and classroom management on some level. So I think all those lessons carry over very well. And then, of course, you can add to that a couple things like endurance in the face of chaos. Those are great things you learn in the military. And those are great things to have as a teacher as well.
Well, you get to focus on the important stuff. There's a lot of peripheral things that take on massive proportions sometimes, particularly when there's change in the organization. It's like, okay, boiled down to the simplest form, what is it I have to do to be successful? What do my students have to do to be successful? And then I can just manage everything else. The rest is don't sweat the small stuff.
So, Colonel Moffitt, you are the commander of the Kenosha Military Academy, which is located in Indian Trail High School and Academies, correct?
Right, yeah, in Kenosha.
Can you tell us a little bit about it? I'm not sure if every listener even knows that we have a military academy in Kenosha.
Well, I guess there's a long history. I found pictures in our archives that show JROTC in Kenosha as far back as the 50s and 60s. I believe there was some kind of a hiatus going on. I don't know every piece of history. The academy itself was set up sometime in the late 1990s
mm-hmm.
And has been in Indian Trails High School or the building that preceded it and also over at Reuther High School in the city. So the point is that it's been around for a while, and as near as I can tell, it was transferred into the building that became Indian Trails High School along with three other academies that Kenosha Unified School District runs.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is a health academy, and one is a business academy, the other one is a communications academy, and then, of course, at the same time, I think they made the decision to somehow package JROTC as the Kenosha Military Academy as well.
Mm-hmm.
So those four academies were in that building, and then they expanded the building fairly recently within the last few years, and that student body has now grown to 2,400 students over there, of which the academy is just, I have about 160 cadets inside that student body, if you will.
Okay, so if a student or a parent or grandparent or someone listening to this was interested, how does one enter Kenosha Military Academy?
Right, lottery. We brief the parents every January. They come in for a briefing, and if they're interested in getting their child into one of the academies, they have to fill out an application form to the Kenosha Unified School District. That enters a lottery, and then they draw the candidates for that year from that lottery
mm-hmm.
based on those applications.
And so, exactly how much of it is military and how much of it is typical high school for those kids?
That's a great question. I think what makes it interesting is the academy structure has one unique aspect, which is those kids have my class every single day. So I have them, unlike some teachers who may not have them every single day, I have them every single day for 4 years, essentially, through the course. The name of the course is Leadership. And so the part I didn't really comprehend when I went in there that's kind of interesting is that there's this sort of small village inside the bigger high school. Mm-hmm. And those kids get to know each other, and they draw the relationships from the folks inside the academy, and that's where they tend to identify themselves, inside that little village.
And so how many of them go into the military or into ROTC programs?
That's a great question, too. I take very little credit for it, but I think something on the order of about 65% of my senior class last year actually did choose to enlist. It's not something I actually – I'm not a recruiter. Mm-hmm. My mission is to build better citizens. That's really my mission statement. However, a fair cross-section of the folks that end up in my academy do have some interest in that as a follow-on career after high school. Mm-hmm. And I guess I was somewhat successful last year because a large percentage went in that route. As far as other routes, for example, I think you mentioned ROTC. Mm-hmm. That's a much lower percentage, although a certain cross-section do go ROTC, probably, I would guess that's probably 3% of my class, but that's fairly logical if you think about it. The officer corps is not that huge, mm-hmm. and not all my kids are necessarily aiming for immediately to go to college right. after high school, and the military is a great option for them because mm-hmm. it has such great benefits these days.
Yes.
I think my table mate will attest that the benefits weren't that great 31 years ago.
Well, it's definitely changed a bit. Since,
yes, it did.
So, Mr. Anderle, I'm wondering if any of your students know about your service, and do they ask you for advice about entering the military?
They do, and they ask about it. And mm-hmm. I said that's a very personal decision, and certainly it's a great experience where a lot of opportunities are there to see the world that would not otherwise be available to you. It also puts a lot of responsibility on you at a much younger age than you would get through other sources. So, you know, if they seek that out and they want to talk, yeah, sure. Again, I'm not a recruiter, mm-hmm. but I certainly endorse those decisions when I have students that have that interest and are pulled that direction.
Do the students also just ask you about your military experience because they're interested in some stories?
Look, every veteran has their sea stories, mm-hmm. and we bring those in. When it's appropriate for the discussion, and as often as not, it comes out more than questions for them, mm-hmm. putting them in a situation, what would you think, how would you feel, so that they kind of do history in my classroom.
Okay. What specifically do you think is similar about teaching and about military service? I know you said a little bit about, you know, there's some crossover skills, but is there anything else about it that you think is similar?
Well, from my perspective, I think you're looking for a level of performance, mm-hmm. okay, on whatever those tasks are. And depending upon the subject, the math and the sciences are very process-oriented, not as much in the humanities. However, you're still looking for, we're trying to, the focus is on developing the critical thinking skills and things like that as we go. So I think you look at it in a lot more detail, having come out of the service, as what's the product that you're getting at the end. And in that regard, I think you're more comfortable embracing failure mm-hmm. as part of that learning process for the student, and again, student-centered, to get them to a place where they're more comfortable with, okay, I got to step up, change my performance and reach a standard. And I think that kind of steps forward.
So one of my, I asked friends on Facebook for questions to ask all of you, and one of the good ones I thought was, which one is harder, teaching or being in the military? Do you have a thought on that, Colonel Moffitt?
Well, that depends, but I would say that I think that military service does have its difficult moments as some of us.
It's a different challenge. I think that's probably a good way to put that.
That's fair enough.
You know, I think we can go with that. There are certain moments that teaching is very challenging, and certainly that's true. But yeah, there's some much longer days in the military that you're going to have to put in to, you know, and go through some things. So yeah, I would say it's just a different challenge.
They're just different.
Very different.
There's
challenges.
Not really that much of
a. Yeah, I was. I often point out my first assignment. I had. I was an air defense officer at that time, and 96-hour shifts were not uncommon. So that's
correct.
A long shift. That's a tough road to hoe. And,
yes.
And so at least we can use that as an example to some of the young people.
There's a lot of sleep deprivation. Everything else goes with that. And
there you go.
You know, I'm no longer 20-something, so I don't do that anymore.
Right. So we're actually almost out of time. So is there any sort of last thoughts you would like to leave our listeners with about your careers in teaching in the military, how they relate to each other, anything, pieces of advice?
Well, I think I guess what I would say is that, you know, I ground the academy on, so similar to what my table mate's been talking about, I ground it on scholastics, athletics, and leadership. Those are sort of my three cornerstones of the program. And so I'm constantly counseling on scholastics, trying to get them to get the highest scholastic averages that they can. Athletics is, of course, a Western ideal, healthy mind and a healthy body. And then the leadership piece is really the name of the course that we're aiming to see if we can grow them as leaders. But I think one of the things is that those skill sets for them are going to go off into the civilian world or the military world, whatever path they choose, and I'm not choosing that path for them. But I think it's going to stand them in good stead if they learn how to lead so that they can go out into their communities and be civic-minded and concerned about citizenship out there. And so I try and grow citizens. That's sort of my objective overall.
Not surprisingly, I see pretty much the same thing.
As a history teacher.
I mean, look, we are in a world that's changing rapidly. We're preparing kids for jobs. We don't even know what they are yet. So the implications of that are kind of huge. So I think the focus has got to be on who they are as people as much as it used to be more content-driven. That's important. But what are the skills that translate from job to job? I mean, my own career path, you'd see almost nothing in the Venn diagram together. So, well, what is this? But ability to think, ability to work with others, ability to get out of a comfort zone, an ability to take a risk as opposed to a gamble, think it through, and be able to go ahead and explain rationally why they think what they think. If they can do that, can read well, and have some basic math skills, they're going to be successful whatever course they choose because it's going to change. They're going to have changes in that course because of the speed of life these days.
Well, those are really good words of advice. Thank you both for coming. Today I have here Greg Anderle, Colonel Randy Moffitt, and earlier in the program, Ted Weaver and Scott Flood. Thank you all so much.
Thank you for having us.
Appreciate it.